This afternoon we're going to go on to the fourth and final of the schools, the Majjhimika philosophical system. Of course, within that there are two sub-schools, Svatantrika and Prasangika, we'll be looking at. And of course, in the Majjhimika, they refute true existence, meaning there's no independent world, no independent subjective me. And when we come to reflect and meditate on this idea of emptiness, it's often recommended that we start by focusing on ourselves as a person. And so that's what I'd like to do now, is begin with a meditation, focusing on the person, and see if there is really a truly existent me here or not. And then we'll go into the tenets text. So let's start with that meditation. We begin, as always, by settling the body into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. And allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. And settling the mind into a state of ease and relaxation. Simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment, focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Maintaining an ongoing flow of mindfulness of the sensations of the breath throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. Now, do you have a sense that there is a me here who is meditating? A me who is trying to relax the body and focus the mind on the breath. A me that seems to exist from its own side, not seeming to depend upon anything else to exist. Do you have this experience? If the me exists from its own side, it must be findable. So can we find the me who is meditating? Can the meditator be found anywhere within the body? So search thoroughly every part of the body and look for the me who is meditating. Is the brain, is that the me who is meditating? Or is the brain simply something which me, the meditator, is using? Is the whole body itself, is that the me who is meditating? Or is the whole body itself simply something which I possess? Something which me, the meditator, is trying to relax? Can me, the meditator, be found anywhere within the mind? So again, search thoroughly every part of the mind and look for the me who is meditating. Are any of the thoughts, emotions, or concepts in the mind? Are any of these the me who is meditating? Or are thoughts, emotions, and concepts simply things which I possess, things which me, the meditator, has? Is the mind itself, is that the me who is meditating? Or is the mind itself simply something which I possess? Something which me, the meditator, is using to focus on the breath? Is the collection of the body and the mind, is that the me who is meditating? or is the collection of the body and the mind simply two things which I possess, two things which me, the meditator, is trying to train? Yet, other than the body and the mind, what else is there here? If there's nothing more than the body and the mind here, then where is the me who possesses this body and mind and is trying to train this body and the mind? Where is me, the meditator? If you can't find me, the meditator, simply rest in the experience of not finding. And even if you didn't find the meditator, isn't there someone who's experiencing this? So there is a me who is meditating. But just because we don't seem to be able to find it, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It simply means it's empty of findable existence. It's empty of existing from its own side. The me who is meditating is something merely labeled on the basis of the body that is sitting here and the mind that is focusing on the breath. The merely labeled me is sitting here meditating. So let's go to the fourth and final philosophical school, the Majjhimika. So we're on page 18 of the text. So here, the first outline definition, it says, the definition of a proponent of Majjhimika, and Majjhimika is often translated into English as middle way, is a person propounding Mahayana tenets who does not accept true existence even conventionally.
That's puzzling, isn't it, when they do accept conventional truth?
Sorry?
They do accept conventional truth.
So what we're going to see when we talk about the two truths, the two truths are not two realities. And even the word conventional truth can be misleading. Because the word conventional truth, coming from the Tibetan, is kunsop denba. And kunsop literally means thoroughly obscured. So actually some people complain about translators translating kunsop as conventional. Because kunsop and that thoroughly obscured can be interpreted in at least two different ways, but the normal way is the thoroughly obscured truth is what's thoroughly obscured is talking about the consciousness, talking about ignorance. So then conventional truth in the Majjhimika is often interpreted in terms of what is true for the thoroughly obscurer, what is true for ignorance. So therefore, of course, ignorance accepts the phenomena that appears to it to truly exist. So for ignorance, things exist as they appear. So conventional truths are the things that are true for ignorance. So in that sense, ultimate truth is then how do actually these things exist that ignorance thinks truly exists. And of course, ultimate truth is emptiness. So the ultimate truth is that these things which seem to be true for ignorance are actually empty of independent existence. And so what is within conventional truth is all these appearances which ignorance believes to exist as they appear actually will understand that they're actually dependent arisings through understanding emptiness. So we'll look at that later as well. So here then, does not accept true existence even conventionally. So what that means is that anything that appears to us is not truly existent. That no Majjhimika or Majjhimika proponent accepts that anything that appears to us is truly existent. Maybe we'll come to this because it's more obvious in the next section in Svatantrika about the terminology. So we'll leave it till next page. So, of course, all the lower schools, the Sautrantika Vaibhashika, accept true existent. They accept truly existent external objects. Chittamatra accept true existence. They accept truly existent internal mind and phenomena being truly existent as well, but internal to the mind. So it's the Majjhimikas who refute all the lower schools. They say nothing truly exists. And there are two divisions here. Svatantrika and Prasangika. Sometimes Svatantrika is translated into English as autonomy school and Prasangika as consequence school. And to have a look at the history of those two schools, we've got the history of the four schools chart. We can see the Majjhimika philosophical system, the founder is Nagarjuna. Considered to be Nagarjuna. So Nagarjuna in the second century wrote his classic text, Mula Majjhimika Karika, the fundamental wisdom of the middle way, describing what the Buddha taught in the second turning of the wheel, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra teachings, where the Buddha taught this idea of emptiness. So it's on the basis of Nagarjuna's work that we really have the Majjhimaka philosophical system developing. Then later, in the 6th century, we have Bhava Viveka coming along, or first actually in this, around the same time, a little bit before him, in the sort of 5th, 6th century, we have Buddha Palita writing a commentary on Nagarjuna, sort of clarifying what Nagarjuna was saying about emptiness. Then shortly after that, we have another Indian master, Bhava Viveka, coming along and criticizing Buddha Palita, saying, you didn't really understand what Nagarjuna was saying. This is really what Nagarjuna was saying, what the idea of emptiness really means. And then a century or so later, we have another great Indian master, Chandrakirti, coming along and looking at both of those commentaries and going, actually, Buddha Palita got it right, Bhava Viveka, you didn't get it right. So it's on the basis of these three commentators that we have this sort of split into Svatantrika and Prasangika. So it's Buddha Palita and Chandrakirti's interpretation that is the basis of the Prasangika view, and Bhava Viveka is the basis of the Svatantrika view, or interpretation of emptiness. Now, the words Svatantrika and Prasangika were coined much later, and there is an assertion that actually they were coined by Tibetan scholars, but certainly, if not, at least much later Indian scholars. And the words Svatantrika and Prasangika, the word Svatantrika means autonomous, and Prasangika means consequence. So the names of the two subschools comes about from the method they use to generate the correct view of emptiness in an opponent. In general, if we are debating with someone about a particular view and we have a different view than the other person, we can go about it trying to convince the other person that we have the right view. We can go about that at least in two different ways. One is that we can use logical reasoning to show to that person that we have the correct view. And that's probably usually when we're arguing or debating with someone, that's usually the approach we use. We try to convince them we have the correct idea by showing to them that our idea is very logical and correct. Normally that's the way we operate when we're sort of debating with someone or arguing with someone who has a different opinion or idea to us. We try to show that ours is a very logical, clear understanding. But also what we can do is we could look at their position and see that actually their view is internally contradictory. So we could, if we wanted, to show that they don't have the right view, we could use their own view and turn it against themselves. We can say, you accept this. Ah, doesn't that imply this? And then this implies that, and that implies that. And we lead them in a very logical way to a point where they're actually contradicting themselves. And they go, oh, you're right. Actually, my idea is completely illogical. It's contradictory. So we can use either of those two approaches to convince or show to that person they have the wrong view and thereby help them to get the correct view. And so that's reflected in these words, Svatantrika, Prasangika. Svatantrika is this idea of what's called autonomous syllogisms, where we are using our own view and stating what's called a syllogism, stating very logical arguments to show that our view is correct. Whereas Prasangika is consequences, where we're working in the other person's view and showing that it's internally contradictory. And a implication of that, as we're going to see, is that if we are arguing with someone and we're presenting our position, then what's often said in the tenets text, we have to have a common basis, what's called a commonly appearing object, that we have to have a common thing that we're discussing for that to work. Whereas within Prasangika, they are unique in saying that what appears to us is deceptive. All the lower schools say that things do exist from their own side. They have inherent nature. Whereas Prasangikas don't accept that. So for them, there's no commonly appearing object to discuss, because they're talking about something that doesn't inherently exist, whereas the opponent is talking about something that inherently exists. So then it's difficult to use that common in terms of establishing. So therefore, we have to really work within that person's position to show that they're internally contradictory, hence prasanga or consequence. And so that is also then leads us to, and this is what the later scholars understood, is that therefore the Svatantrikas are saying that things do really inherently exist, even though they refute true existence. So that's a little bit how these two, the names of the subschools and their slightly different positions, but we'll go into that in more detail later. So I just wanted to mention the naming of the two schools, why is they named that way. And then in Svatantrika, in the history, we see there are two subschools which we're going to come to, Sautrantika Svatantrika and Yogacara Svatantrika. And we'll have a look at the differences in those two when we get into the Svatantrika section now. Okay, so let's launch into the Svatantrika school, subschool. So it's on page 19. And again, it's the same seven outlines as the other schools we looked at. The first is the definition. Definition of a proponent of Svatantrika is the proponent of Majjhimika, who by the way of asserting autonomous reasons does not accept true existence even conventionally. So again, a Svatantrika is the one who uses these autonomous reasons to establish the correct view that nothing exists truly. And so this autonomous reasons is what's often called this autonomous syllogism. So remember, I think last weekend we already even talked about that if we want to prove a thesis, we need what's called the three modes. And let's use an example. So the thesis is that pot is impermanent because it is a product, is the thesis. So we're wanting to show that to someone. So for that, it has to have the three modes to be established. One, of course, is that we have to have the presence of the reason in the subject. So the fact that a pot is a product. So, of course, the opponent has to accept that already, that the pot is a product. Otherwise, we can't use that reason, of course. So, assuming that they accept that the pot is a product, then we can use this reasoning, that the reason is in the subject. But then we have to have forward and reverse pervasion for that to work. We have to have the fact that whatever is a product is necessarily impermanent, and the reverse pervasion, whatever is necessarily not impermanent cannot be a product. So if we have those three modes, then we can use this reasoning, this syllogism, to establish the correct view in an opponent. So this is what it means by here, these autonomous syllogisms or autonomous reasons. And here we have, it says, a proponent of Svatantrika and a proponent of Majjhimika who propounds inherent existence are equivalent. So if we actually go back and look at that chart we looked at, the modes of existence chart, and actually, if we actually jump down to the bottom of page 19 in the tenets, under way of asserting objects, it says here for Svatantrika, existence by way of its own characteristics, existence from its own side, and inherent existence are equivalent. So those three terms mean the same thing for Svatantrika. So remember, Svatantrika is Majjhimika, so they refute true existence. But they accept these three things. And we see that in the Svatantrika when we talk about all phenomena conventionally. So remember, the definition of a Majjhimika, a middle way person, is they refute the true existence conventionally of everything. So we see that they do not accept true existence conventionally, but they do accept existence by way of its own character, inherent existence, existence from its own side. That if things do not exist inherently from their own side or by way of its own character, they actually wouldn't exist. So for them, inherent existence and true existence don't mean the same thing. In fact, when we talk about true existence, the way it's often defined in Svatantrika here is something like, true existence is something's own uncommon mode of abiding without appearing to a non-defective awareness. So that's how they often, it's not in the tenets text, but often Svatantrika, when they say, well, what does it mean to be truly existent? It means something existing by way of its own uncommon way of abiding without appearing to a non-defective awareness. Which implies it has an uncommon mode of abiding, but only in conjunction with appearing to an awareness, which is inherent existence. So things do have their own uncommon way of existing, i.e. inherent existence, existing from their own side, existing with their own characteristics, but not independent of, they're not existing independent of the awareness. That would be true existence. So to understand a little bit what that means for them, we can see that often when they talk about emptiness, they use analogies. And all schools use analogies in this area. And the one that you often see connected with Svatantrika is the magician's illusion when they talk about emptiness. And they talk about in the past how we had magicians who would trick people. And they say that the magician would have a stick or a pebble. They put that down. Then they'd blow some sort of magic dust into the eyes of the people and say some mantras. And then suddenly, instead of a stick, there'd be an elephant or a horse. And that analogy, we can see from that analogy that we started with something for there to be a horse. There was not a horse there existing from its own side, independently of the mind, of the observer. But there was something coming from there, and then the magicians blew some magic dust into the eyes of the person. So there's something coming from the side of the person, something coming from there, and then, woof, there's a horse or an elephant. So this is... Sorry? So what we're saying is that Svatantrika is saying nothing exists independent of the mind, because that's true existence. But what they're sort of implying is that for something to come into existence, there's something coming from the side of the object, something coming from the side of the subject, and when they come together, then it exists. And one of the arguments I think they use is that if there's nothing coming from the side of the object, if there's no, like, cupness coming from the side of the object, then we could call it whatever we wanted. There would be no basis upon which to call it a cup. if there's nothing coming from the side of the object to suggest to us that this is a cup? There would be no base. We could just call it anything then. So they say that there's something coming from the side of the cup. It has exists from its own side and it exists inherently. That is coming from the side of the object. And then the mind is coming together with that. And then we go, cup. But that cup is not truly existent. It's not existing independent of the mind. So it's only when the object and subject come together, then there's things exist. So this is a little bit their assertion. Whereas the Prasangika is refuting inherent existence, existing from their own side. So they say there's nothing coming from the side of the object. Of course, Prasangikas who look at this view that Svatantrikas say things do have inherent existence, exist from our own side, they say, you Svatantrikas, you're really saying things truly exist. You're just like the lower schools. So they say to think that inherent existence and true existence are not the same thing is not very logical. So, of course, they wouldn't accept that. They would say, by saying that things inherently exist, that's the same as saying they truly exist. So Prasangikas would say, would reject that idea. Okay.
So we could say that cup exists inherently at the time of the consciousness apprehending it.
Well, the only cup that exists is one that we apprehend.
Yeah.
And that cup exists inherently, yes. It exists from its own side.
Not truly,
because that would imply that it would exist independent of the mind, which they don't accept. In fact, that's what true existence for them is. Something existing by its own uncommon way of existing without appearing to a non-defective awareness. So they refute that. Okay. Then if we look at the second outline, the divisions, we see Svatantrika also has two sub-schools, the Saltrantika Svatantrika and the Yogacara Svatantrika. If we look at the definition of each of those, it becomes clear what they're referring to. The definition of proponent of Saltrantika Svatantrika is a proponent of Majjhimika who propounds a presentation of conventionalities through mostly conforming with the proponents of Saltrantika, whereas the Yogacharas are proponents of Majjhimika who propounds a presentation of conventionalities through mostly conforming with the proponents of Cittamatra. Which means that the Saltrantika Svatantikas, like the Saltrantikas, accept external objects and they accept the presentation of the six types of consciousness. Whereas the Yogacara Svatantikas, based on Cittamatra, they refute external reality and they also accept the eight consciousnesses, i.e. they accept mind basis of all. But both of those, of course, refute true existence.
So these
if you can do that parallel, remembering here, Jungyam Shepa rejects that idea. He said that there are true aspectarians who follow scripture, follow reasoning, follow Sangha and Dharmakirti and the other one as well. That's what his assertion is. But yes, in this text, it seems to indicate that. So yes, probably the Yogacharas here, you may find there could be both versions. Oh, the ones, the eight consciousnesses. Yeah, sure. Yeah, whether all Yogacara Svatantrikas accept that, not sure. But as we're going to see, actually I think it comes up in the text, maybe not, it does sort of tend to indicate that the Yogacara Svatantrikas are the ones who really are following a Sangha versus Dharmakirti. Seems to indicate that, but may not be true. May have both variations. Probably. And then it gives illustrations of proponents of Saltrantika, Svatrantika, Bhavaveka. So he was the Indian master who really established the Svartantrika in general. And there's another one, Janagarbha, I think came later. And the illustrations are proponents of Yogacara, Svartantrika. Shantarakshita, of course, who was a great Indian master who originally brought Buddhism into Tibet, through together with Padmasambhava, established the Nyingma school. And then we have Haribhadra and Kamalashila. Kamalashila was a student, of course, of Shantarakshita as well. So those are some examples of the two sub-schools. Atisha, of course, presented the Prasangika view. And then in the third outline, the... is there a question? No. The etymology, there is a reason why Baba Vivek is called proponent of Svartantrika, Svartantrika. He's called such due to the reason of him being a proponent of Madhyamaka who asserts autonomous reason. So again, this is the etymology of the word Svartantrika is autonomous reasons, to establish the correct view by presenting this autonomous syllogisms to the opponent. And as we saw then in the way of asserting the object, we saw here these three terms: existence by way of its own characteristics, existence from its own side, and inherent existence are equivalent. So we saw that in that modes of existence chart, that for Svartantrika, they make a distinguish between true existence and inherent existence, existing from its own side, established by way of its own characteristics. They say that they are not meaning the same thing. Where they reject true existence, but they accept inherent existence, existing from its own side and established by way of its own characteristics. Whereas for Prasangika, of course, they are all synonymous. So when we say that Madhyamikas refute true existence, then for Prasangika and for Svartantrika, that they have a different idea of what that really means. Because the Svartantrikas are not refuting inherent existence, where the Prasangikas are. Even though they're both using the same words of refuting true existence, the meaning of that word is not synonymous in those two sub-schools. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay, let's look at the last sentence then on page 19. Uncompounded space. So here is now there's a presentation of the two truths, but actually there's no, as with the other schools and for Prasangika, there seems to be no definition in this text given for conventional truth and ultimate truth. However, if we look at the two truths chart, we have a definition for Svartantrika coming from another text. And the definition is very similar to the Chittamatra definition here. A phenomena realized by a direct valid cognizer, realizing it by way of an association with dualistic appearance for conventional truth, and ultimate truth, a phenomena realized by direct valid cognizer, realizing it by way of a vanishing of dualistic appearance. But in this particular text, there's no definition of the two truths mentioned. But we can see here what are conventional truths and what are ultimate truths. So it says here, uncompounded space, true cessations, past, future, and subtle selflessness of persons are both non-affirming negatives and conventional truths. So here, what is interesting is two things. One is true cessation, as with the lower schools actually, is a conventional truth. It's a mere separation from an object to be abandoned by the antidote. And this, of course, is different to Prasangika, because Prasangika say that actually true cessations are emptinesses and therefore ultimate truth. So that's probably why it's being mentioned here, to distinguish it from Prasangika. Also, past and future is a non-affirming negative. So a true cessation is a non-affirming negative because it's a mere separation from something to be abandoned due to an antidote. An uncompounded space is a non-affirming negative because it's a mere absence of obstructive contact. It's a mere separation from an object of abandonment due to an antidote. And past and future, past, of course, is that which has arisen and ceased to exist. So that cessation of existing is an absence of that thing. So that's a non-affirming negative. And future is that which is yet to arise. So that is also an absence or a mere negation. And again, I think it's mentioned here because in Prasangika, they don't accept this. Past and future are not non-affirming negatives in Prasangika. They are actually functional phenomena. How they present that, it's coming.
I think my brain has ground. This is a racing head, but I'm a non-affirming negative,
right.
Basically.
Right.
A negative that doesn't affirm something.
Right. So we have, remember from the first week, last week, probably our memories faded from last week already, we have two types of phenomena. Exactly. Cease to exist. You know? We have two types of phenomena, positive and negative. So positive is something that is established not through a negation process. A negative phenomena is something established through negating something. Now, in that negation, we can have what's called non-affirming or affirming negation. Meaning we can negate something without affirming something else, or we can negate something that implies something else, that affirms something else. So he's saying here that all these things are what's called a mere negation, a non-affirming negation. They're simply negating something without affirming anything else. That's a non-affirming negative. And subtle selfness as a phenomena, again, is a mere negation. It's negating a self-sufficient, substantially existent self. So he's saying that all these are mere negations, but also saying they're conventional truths. So first is that for Prasangika, true cessations, true cessations and selflessness of person are not conventional truths for Prasangika. And past and future for Prasangika are not non-affirming negatives. Prasangika would accept that uncompounded space is a non-affirming negative and a conventional truth, so they'd agree with that one. But the others are listed here because Prasangika don't accept this. So for Prasangika, true cessations are emptinesses, so ultimate truths, and subtle selflessness of person here for Chittamatra. So here's the difference too. For Chittamatra, so subtle selflessness of person here, of course, is a lack of self-sufficient, substantially existent self. For them, that's conventional truth. Because ultimate truth is a lack of true existence. Chittamatra, who accept the same selfness as a person, actually say it's an ultimate truth. Prasangika, selfness as a person is not a lack of self-sufficient, substantially existent self. It's lack of inherent existence. So for them also, it's ultimate truth, but the meaning of it is different. So that's why these are listed here, to highlight differences between Svatantrika and Prasangika, and also a little bit Chittamatra.
Sorry, could you say again how true cessation is seen as a conventional truth?
Because it's a mere separation from an object of abandonment. So that is, for here, an ultimate truth is emptiness. So Svatantrikas say that mere separation is not an emptiness. No, it's not changing. It's uncompounded. It's a non-affirming negative, so it's uncompounded. But Prasangika, as we're going to see, assert that that is actually an emptiness. But why they say that is coming later. Right, so true cessation, as it's defined here, it's a mere separation from something. That's all.
But isn't that the same in magic classification?
No. Not really, because they talk about the... Anyway, to answer that, it's coming. So let's leave it till then. Yeah, but he's getting it not from this text, because it's not in this text. So what definition does he have for conventional truth for Svatantrika? So he's obviously getting it from some other text.
This is the presentation.
This text. But that is not coming from this text, whatever he's saying. That's what I'm saying. What's he saying is the conventional truth? It's the same as what I've said here. So this is coming from some other tenet's text. It's not coming from this text. Yeah. So that'll be coming from another tenet's text. Okay, let's, before we go for a tea break, let's just jump over and look at ultimate truth over the page. An ultimate truth, there's no definition, but again, from this chart, ultimate truth is that realized by a valid cognizer, realizing it by way of a vanishing of dualistic appearance. Ultimate truth, final reality and subtle selflessness of phenomena are equivalent. So final reality is another word for dhammata in Sanskrit. And of course, subtle selflessness of phenomena here is realizing that things lack true existence. So we can see that in the Coarse and Subtle Selflessness chart is for Svatantrika, the selflessness of person, subtle selflessness of person, is person being empty of being self-sufficient, substantially existent. So for them, that is not ultimate truth. Ultimate truth is how things exist, which is all phenomena being empty of true existence, which is here, subtle selfness is phenomena, it's ultimate truth. Chiaro? Sure. No, because remember, ultimate truth for Svatantrika is all functional phenomena. And ultimate truth for Vaibhashika is partless particles. So no is the answer. But for the... and even for Prasangika, it's not. Because subtle selfness as a person being empty of inherent existence, is ultimate truth, is... for Prasangika. So we have to be very careful when we use those words. Okay, let's break for tea and come back and see if we can go a little bit more into the Svatantrika system in the next session.